Welcome to the Psychology World podcast with me, Connor Whiteley, psychology student and international best-selling psychology author of over 30 psychology books, bringing you the latest psychology news, fascinating psychology topics and more each week. If you want to learn more, then please check out connorwhiteley.net/books. And don't forget to like and subscribe to the YouTube video or follow on your favourite podcast app. And here's the show. Hi everyone and welcome to episode 265 of the Psychology World podcast with me, Connor Whiteley. And today's episode is on what are the types of a group for therapy? And it is Sunday the 12th of May 2024 as I record this. So today's episode is actually really a good one and a rather interesting one from a clinical psychology standpoint, because when it comes to other podcast episodes that I've done, when it comes to the NICE guidelines in the UK, clinical psychology lectures, textbooks and other type of books and resources, we always mainly focus on individual psychotherapy, which is brilliant. I'm a massive supporter of it, obviously, but as we often talk about group therapy too. But normally, whenever we talk about group therapy, this is more of like a passing mention. So none of us really have any deep understanding of what group therapy actually is, what it knows, and most importantly, what are the different types? Because I thought group therapy was just group therapy. I thought it was this one thing that's adapted to better suit different therapeutic models. But no, it turns out that there's three types. So that's what we're going to be learning about in today's episode. And I really did enjoy it. So I know you're going to enjoy it too. So that's coming up in the content part of today's episode. So we're moving on to the psychology news section, we're reading from the British Psychological Society Research Digest. And the first one is, empathy, not personality, predicts AI cheating. There's been plenty of speculation about ChatGPT's pervasiveness in academia, and in particular, on its potential role in helping students cheat. Yet, much of the chatter around use of AI tools and by students is anecdotal, and there's currently little research on how often they are actually being used, for whatever reasons, and by who. In the new paper published in The Internet and Higher Education, David Playfoot, Martha Quigley and Andrew G. Thomas of Swansea University sought to understand how willing students are to employ ChatGPT in assignments and explore factors associated with it. Through a series of analyses, they find that the level of empathy students feel towards their studies could be used to predict AI tool usage, suggesting potential interventions that may make this brand of plagiarism and cheating less appealing. Okay, so this is actually quite a good one, because I was actually having this conversation on Wednesday, because I had to go to university for a revision lecture, which, I mean, that in itself was like quite a chore. But afterwards, I was talking like to these two girls, which I had not seen like for ages though, and we were actually talking about like ChatGPT, and it was quite interesting to hear their thoughts on it. So the reason why they didn't want to use it was one person didn't want to use it because apparently all autistic people are already more likely to get flagged for AI usage because of how they write and how they structure things, even if they haven't used AI generated tools, which I think is quite concerning and quite annoying, but that's life, I guess. But then like the other girl, she didn't want to use it because she was quite scared of it, and she really didn't want to get done for plagiarism. And I think from her, there was this sort of fear. I definitely can understand this research in terms of that if you care about your studies, if you want to make sure that you do well and you don't do anything wrong, then AI usage is not for you. I get that. And I think that's partly why I don't use it, besides from the copyright and legal issues, which I'm quite annoyed at already as a business person and writer. So I do understand that. But not caring about your studies and AI usage is definitely an interesting food for thought though. And I think from an applied psychology perspective, it would be good to that if this is a root cause, then the next step would very much be what do we do next to help it decrease apathy, and how do we increase people caring about their studies enough so they don't use AI tech. So interesting for sure. Caring for care leavers. Oh, I love this topic. Some research puts a prevalence of mental health issues amongst CAREG experienced students at 50%, whilst the Anna Freud Centre suggests that 70 to 80% have recognisable mental health concerns. Such issues are deeply interlinked with other material disadvantages, such as barriers to accessing healthcare and education. These care experienced children grow into young adults, often with mental health struggles remaining unaddressed. Evidence suggests that many CAREG experienced young people who need mental health support don't receive it, or when they do, they face further barriers, like many have transit living situations, for example, or they fall into the treatment gap when moving from children's mental health services to adult services. This can lead to longer-term mental health difficulties that remain both undetected and unsupported. To better understand these barriers, the University of Bath's Alice Phillips and colleagues from around the UK worked directly with a CAREG experienced adult to co-produce research exploring their experiences of accessing mental health support. The latest work uncovers a number of insights for how to improve services for care leavers. So, personally, I think care leavers is a brilliant topic. It's very personal to me because of one of my old best friends, and he was absolutely brilliant. He was amazing. So I do have a soft spot for care leavers, and I really do want to see them thrive in terms of mental health, education, and tons of other stuff. For example, as an outreach ambassador, my old mentor, she's actually in a charge of helping recruitment from certain demographics, including care leavers. So it's really great to hear her talk about it. I always want to get in those, but because of this particular group and their trust issues, I'm not allowed to work with them, basically. Yeah, because they're basically, though, in terms of the only people that can actually work with care leavers, at least at my university, is other care leavers. So in terms of the student population, staff, it doesn't matter. But anyway, though, so that's another topic there. Well, but I know that there's a particular work opportunity coming up at my university, which is to support a massive care leavers event, which I really want to go to. I really want to work that, not only because the money would be really good, but also because the learning opportunity, the chance to talk to people, the chance to support people. So I think I am going to try and press her to let me work that, because I know that one's open to everyone. So I think it's really important. I think it's really critical that we do help care leavers because they do deserve the best start to life. And yes, when we talk about that best start to life, we mainly focus on developmental topics, but we also need to talk about it from a mental health perspective. And this is where it comes from. And this is why psychology is so important. So the last one is behaviour on the blockchain. As technology advances ever onwards, it's inevitable that new methodological approaches will become available to those conducting psychological research. In a recent piece for the psychologist, Ian McGrath invited us to reconsider potential use of an emerging source of behavioral information, blockchains. Open quote. What should be of most interest to psychologists and the researchers alongside the content of the data is that much of the data is open and permissionless. Anyone can participate in the network, perform transactions, and store or retrieve information on the blockchain anonymously and without restriction. Public permissionless blockchains like the Bitcoin and Ethereum networks, offer huge opportunity for researchers with billions of data points representing hundreds of millions of people's real-time behavior. Blockchain is a treasure trove of open source behavioral data. Close quote. Okay, so I can't say too much about this because, blockchain really is not my area of expertise nor interest. But as much as I absolutely hate my autumn term stats lecturer, because he was useless, he was truly, truly useless. How any of us pass that exam, I do not understand. Well, no, actually, but the only reason we passed it was because our spring term lecturer had to come and save us. And she's brilliant. I really do like her, and she's independent now, so she doesn't work at the university. But I think that the only sort of golden thing that he did tell us about was artificial intelligence becoming more important in the next few years. Of course, I think that, like, I know blockchain and artificial intelligence are two completely different things. But I think that this just shows that the future is changing, which it always would. And if you're a researcher, then I think that thinking about how these new technologies could impact our behavior, but also how could they impact research and how could they make our lives easier and how could they make data collection easier. Because let's face it, data collections are pain at times. Not everyone likes it. And to do these massive studies, which get good, valid results, I think this is really hard though. So if a blockchain can actually help us get more data, quicker, plus if it's also high quality data, then that's going to be even more important moving forward. I definitely think that it's interesting and definitely food for thought. So I hope you enjoy the psychology news section. So let's move on to the personal update. So we're moving on to the personal update. This I'm going to keep very short because even though this has been a very good week in terms of my personal celebrations, going up to London to the virtual reality escape room, that was brilliant. I really do recommend that. Especially if you can find it in your local area, at the company that we used, and this isn't an official endorsement or anything there, but DNA VR, brilliant company. I had a lot of fun. We did the space station Tiberius one, and that was a really nice birthday thing though. And Stats Evolution continues with various degrees of success because my exams are coming up in 3 days. So 3 days time I've got my statistical theory, and then in 4 days time I've got my computing exam. So very fun times ahead. But besides from that, it's also been quite a hard week because of stuff related to my assaults being triggered and it being quite messy at times. So that's all that I'm going to say though. So as always, I always love to hear your thoughts and feelings on today's episode. So you can always email me, ConnorWiley@ConnorWiley.net. You can always leave a comment at the show notes at ConnorWiley.net/podcast. And you can always tweet me on Twitter at SciFiWiley. I always love to hear from all of you because it really helps make the podcast feel more like a conversation. And today's episode has been sponsored by Working with Children and Young People, a guide to clinical psychology, mental health, and psychotherapy. So this is a great sponsor for today's episode, not only because group therapy and clinical psychology also focuses on mental health, but sometimes you actually can use group therapy of like a children. It's like not often, but you also can though. And the reason why I really like this book though is that it focuses on how can clinical psychologists impact children and how can we actually help them thrive and develop successfully. But also, and this is what I really like about it, it actually focuses on what clinical psychologists actually do in like the workplace, because clinical psychology isn't divorced from the rest of the world. And yes, clinical psychology brings so much value to children and adolescent mental health services, but isn't the only one. It also talks about speech and language therapists, psychological well-being practitioners, pediatrics, and so many other great professions that we can work with to help children. So it's very like a useful book though, because it helps you understand that like a deeper level. It also talks about how do child and adolescent mental health services work. And one of my favourite topics from this book is that it actually talks about paediatric psychology, which is really interesting. And it really is that sort of like merger between paediatric medicine, and then it puts a very psychological spin on it though, for example like pain management and so much more. So I really do like and recommend it. So that's Working With the Children and Young People, available from all major ebook retailers, and you can get the paperback and hardback version from Amazon, your local bookstore or local library if you request it. Or you can get the audiobook narrated by artificial intelligence at selected audiobook retailers like Kobo, Spotify, Google Play, Barnes & Noble, and selected library systems like Baker & Taylor, Biblioteca, and Overdrive. And whilst buying books helps to support the creation and the editing of the podcast, my time is sponsored by my wonderful patrons. And as always, a massive thank you to my patrons. Your support shows that you like the show and you want it to continue. So if you want to become a patron and get tons of great rewards, now you can at patreon.com/thepsychologyworldpodcast. So that's enough of the personal update. Let's move on to the content part of today's episode. So we're moving on to the content part of today's episode. So we're going to be talking about what are the types of group therapy. So this is a great episode. I really enjoyed it and I hope you do too. So let's dive into it. What is group therapy? The main difference between individual therapy and group therapy is that group therapy offers their clients things that individual therapy cannot. For example, group therapy offers their clients a chance to meet others experiencing the same or similar difficulties as them, and introduces them to different people at different stages of their recovery, which can be extremely useful to our clients just starting their own recovery. So you can immediately see what a group therapy can accomplish, because you can see people who have had positive treatment outcomes. Personally, the reason why I'm focusing on this topic at the moment in time is that I've been thinking a lot about survivors group settings and the benefit that I might get from engaging in an survivor community and talking with other survivors. I know I'm not there yet, I'm seriously not, but this personal tragedy did spark my interest in actually looking into a group therapy and trying to understand it a little more. Especially because I know assistant psychologists tend to get heavily involved in a group therapy work. But at university, no one really talks about group therapy, so I want to help change this, so no one is in the dark about this useful and important area of psychotherapy. What are the three types of a group therapy? What is educational group therapy? Whenever I think of the group therapy, educational group therapy never makes it onto my list because I think that this is just a major part of all therapies, and it is to some extent, since the purpose of psychoeducational group therapy is to teach your clients about their mental health condition and help them to learn coping skills. These conditions can include anger management, depression, anxiety or bipolar disorder. This type of group therapy, clients tend to meet once a week for 1 or 2 hours. Then in these sessions, a therapist helps their clients to learn the skills they need to manage or overcome whatever difficulty that they're facing. As well as the therapist might give them homework or reading that to help the client further understand their progress in between sessions. Finally, typically cognitive behavioral therapy is used in psychoeducation group therapy because this therapy module helps the clients to identify, challenge, as well as change any biased cognitive processes that they have. Also, CBT is very action and present orientated, so the clients can come away from this therapy type with the tools and knowledge to help them recover. Personally, as much as the idea about CBT is only present focused, and I say in air quotes, is a myth because CBT can focus to a limited extent on the past if they needed, I can understand why CBT is used in group settings because it's easy to follow, it's manualized, and it's cost effective, so you can treat a range of clients at once. And the former NHS commissioning officer that I spoke to before would be so proud of me for that comment. On another home, psychoeducational group therapy is about teaching our clients about their condition and any coping skills that you need to help deal with whatever they face. What is support group therapy? Whenever we think of that group therapy, this is certainly the one that pops in to mind because we can see this constantly on TV, movies and in books. This is typically shown as alcoholics, gambling or narcotics anonymous, and I can certainly say that some shows do it better than others. Since I've only ever read the academic sources on these groups, but when you compare these sources to TV shows, some TV shows are seriously lacking in the accuracy. Anyway, the entire point of a support group therapy is that a client is with other people that are like themselves. This allows the client to talk about why they joined the group, what their current struggles are, and what they hope to get out of the group, also known as their goals. The main aim of support group therapy is for clients to encourage each other to move forward in their recovery. Therefore, clients offer each other words of motivation, compassion, and they share stories with each other. As well as with the support group, clients can meet others who are further along in their recovery, and this can give them a powerful sense of hope for the future. In addition, support groups allow our clients to see firsthand how group therapy help others because the group members tend to drop in and out and the clients can find themselves in a new group of people from one session to the next. Now, but the interesting thing about support group therapy compared to other types of therapy is that you can join it at any time. You don't need to wait for the current group to finish their course of therapy before the group allows a new intake to join. Due to, it is the group leader that kicks off the session and keeps the meeting going forward. But the leader doesn't encourage or teach extensive interactions between members, partly because these are group leaders aren't mental health professionals normally, nor are they typically licensed. In my opinion, I do like the idea of a support group because I've read the research on their effectiveness for gamblers, alcoholics, victims and more. I know they're important and I know they can be very effective if you find a good one and if you put the work in. In my current situation, I'm still playing up with the idea of joining a support group because part of me wants to hear stories, I want to know I'm not alone, and I want to have the sense of other people having been through it and thriving in some small way. I know I'm not there yet because this week I was trying to read some survivor stories online and that went so wrong. That was a mistake, but maybe this support group thing is something for the future. Just because a client isn't a good fit for something now doesn't mean that they won't be in the future. What is processing / working group therapy? This is another type of group therapy I've never heard of before this podcast episode. And in working group therapy, the clients aren't there to offer each other sympathy and support. And they aren't there to learn more about their condition. Instead, this type of group therapy focuses on interpersonal processes, so each client encourages each other to self-explore. Then the clients challenge each other and discuss their difficulties in a back-and-forth manner. In addition, these sessions are normally led by a licensed mental health professional, but they are mainly there to facilitate the discussion instead of offering wisdom. As well as these conversations can flow naturally from topic to topic, so clients can jump in at any time or just sit and listen. Also, clients can offer each other advice, compassionate personal experiences, and most importantly, they can learn from one another. And it is this idea of learning from others that I love. I love the idea that someone who is struggling with mental health condition can learn from other people that have been through the same or very similar experiences to them. Since I've been in individual therapy before, and I love it, I support it, and I know that it works. Yeah, I always feel that minor disconnect in terms of experiences, because sometimes I think it would be nice to hear from someone who has been through a similar thing to me, instead of a therapist who only has an academic knowledge of what I've been through and experiences that they've heard from other people. Of course, I acknowledge that is a brilliant way to do therapy, since it allows a client to unlock and realise the answers for themselves instead of relying on someone else to effectively spoon-feed them the answers. But it's an interesting and fun idea, hearing from someone else. Conclusion. Overall, whether a client is dealing with anxiety, anger, depression, or another mental health condition, they might benefit from spending time with people who have experienced the same as them. Group therapy might help them feel less alone and abandoned. It gives a client a chance to find strength, inspiration, and comfort, in addition to learning new skills, develop new connections, and receive guidance. And individual psychotherapy is still brilliant because it works, it's a useful, and it changes lives for the better. But there is one thing individual therapy will never be able to accomplish like a group therapy. And this is important, it's critical, and it can be life-changing. Group therapy teaches you are never alone in your experiences. And that is a wonderfully powerful thing to realise. So I really hope that you enjoyed today's episode and you got something out of it. I know that I did because, again, I'm still playing around this idea of like a group therapy setting. I think I still like it. To be honest, I probably know I'm not going to do it because, I mean, I'm not ready for that yet. And by the time I am, I think that I might just be pretending that I'm fine and that I don't need it. But this is the thing that I like about psychology, and the thing that I like doing about this podcast. It gives me an excuse to learn. It gives me a reason to sit down, research some stuff, and I can figure out my own stuff based on this knowledge. Because I'm never going to learn about group therapy in my master's stuff. I'm never going to read about this in a textbook. Mainly because this isn't something that's widely spoken about in my experience. But by doing this research, by doing this podcast episode, by hopefully educating people, I'm making group therapy something that's more realised and something that might be more readily spoken about though. So I think it's interesting and it's useful. If you know someone who enjoyed today's episode and to get something out of it, then please share it with them. I'm always really grateful when you wonderful people help spread the word about the podcast. And if you want to learn more, definitely check out Working with Children and Young People. It's a brilliant book that I highly recommend, and it's available in all the usual places. If you want to become a patron of the show, then you can at patreon.com/ The Psychology World Podcast, or buy me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/ Conor Whiteley. Then have a great day, everyone, and I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. Please remember to like the video and subscribe to the YouTube channel and follow the podcast on your favourite podcast app. And if you wanted to learn more, then please check out the backlist of the podcast episodes or my books at conorwhiteley.net. So have a great day and I'll see you next time.